Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
We are live with a completely unnecessary podcast for Wednesday, September 24th, 2014. Besides eager Ian Ferguson.
Howdy.
I'm Pat Contry. Ian, how you doing?
I'm getting pudgy.
Getting?
You know how I do. Just getting a little weight going.
I like how the first thing I say is about the mic level, and you lean back 8 feet the first.
Yeah, because you know I'm poking at my pudge.
Why are you pudgy? Why aren't you working out? You had the YMCA membership.
Just walk the time.
Walk to the freaking YMCA
after I get married.
You just get in shape before you get married. You don't want to be sexy for Vonnie.
If she doesn't approve of me the way I am now, it's only going to get worse as I get older.
Well, I don't approve of you the way you are now.
Yeah, well, good thing I'm not marrying you, Pat.
Coming up on the show, we're talking about the E.T. landfill carts going to eBay. A Doctor Strange movie was announced. Deadpool movie confirmed. Digital gun buyback program. Nintendo's 125th birthday. NES Game Lock goes for $15,000. Smash 3DS demo, first impressions from Ian and I. WWE update with Night of Champions and Roman Reigns being injured. The Retron 5 cracked into some nefarious stuff that might be going on. And your Q&A. So your wedding's like less than a month out now.
It's 2.5 weeks away.
2.5 weeks?
Yep. We still have to make favors. And we got to get our wedding license. And other than that, we just have to have a good time. I mean, we're pretty much ready. We started picking songs for our playlist.
Got a DJ?
We've got an iPod.
You know, I DJed a few times in college.
I think you've told me that once.
I think
you've mentioned that before. But yeah, I mean, everything is pretty much ready to go. Got to drop off some forms by this weekend or Monday. And yeah, we're pretty much set. I have friends flying in from out of town, so I'm really excited for a lot of that.
I'm exhausted from Retropalooza the past weekend. I was in Arlington, Texas, run by Billy and Jay, the Game Chasers. Very well done convention. Only their second year. Panel went very well. It was early Saturday morning, but I believe it was full. And the Play the Punk Challenge was pretty exciting. And good questions.
Exciting.
And we showed off a new Ask Frank, which just came out today. Whoa, that's a little promotion there. And we also showed the new Pat the NES Punk video, Toki. Did you see Toki?
No.
Toki? Go watch Toki. It's on the YouTubes. It's on my website. It's gonna be fun. We also, in the past couple days, we finished up video game years filming.
Yeah.
I guess you were concerned about my tweet.
No, I wasn't concerned. There was like 4, 5, 6 people who were like confused by it.
Well, so, call the cops then at that point.
Well, fuck off. You should explain things to your fans, you dumbass. So basically what's going on is the Kickstarter covered video game years from where we left off, which I believe is 80, 81, all the way through to the end of the decade to 89. We have finished shooting for 89. People read the tweet as you and I were leaving the video game years. That's not it.
We are leaving, but everyone else is leaving.
Well, yeah,
too.
The entire show is going on hiatus after 89.
After we finish production of 89, which will be around, I guess, end of October. At least my responsibilities. People don't know what I do on the show. Besides being part of the committee that helps spearhead the topics for each year, I'm basically in charge of the editors for the assembly edits, which means basically the construction of every segment you've seen since 83 has Pat's stamp on it in terms of every clip in the order you see it. I have to approve that. And so if the editors come with me with something's missing something, say they forgot to talk about the NES controller D-pad, I got to tell them to put it back in.
Is your stamp a butterfly with like a tribal design behind it?
Tribal design? What is this, 98? I'm getting a tattoo with that armband thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what I do in the show. It's a lot of work, but it's worth it because this is the show that I want it to be 50 years from now when I'm dead. They'll say, these dead guys talking about the NES and Ninja Gaiden, and this is how I'm learning about video games in my futuristic little, you know, house on the moon. That's how they're going to be learning about it.
I really enjoyed doing the show. Not to say that we won't revisit it, but, you know, it was fun because for Pat and I, we just had to sit down and talk I mean, there was very little research that had to go into it, which isn't to say that I just talked out of my ass if I wasn't sure about something I looked, but it was really fun to just sit down and basically do the best part of my job again, which is to just talk shit about video games.
Yeah, and I think we have a camaraderie when it comes to it. It's great when we both know the topic because we usually talk about different stuff from a different angle.
Right.
And there's usually times when you know about a game and I don't. Like, you know about the RPGs maybe and I don't know, and I don't. Or I know about maybe more about a sports title or something like Tecmo Bowl and you might have anything to add. But there's times when we hit a rhythm, which is really good, and then we get these little inside jokes that I'd say 98% of the jokes we have are not planned. We just stumble upon them while we're filming. And that's why they're good and that's why they're authentic. So most of what you see with us in the video game years is, yes, it's us just being ourselves and having fun. But the fact of the matter is it got more and more difficult to shoot these because once we got to, like, 87 in particular, it's hard to cut stuff out. People are going to be bitching and moaning, which they did, especially on the internal team. But we got through it. I'm proud of it, where it's come from. And so we're going to leave off at 89, and then if we get funding, if they can sell more DVDs, it might go forward to get to 99. I personally think it should end in the year 2000. But even if it ends in 99 and gets to the Dreamcast, that probably would be good.
I think we all decided that if we had, like, a particular cutoff in mind, it would be the Dreamcast. Yeah. It would be the Dreamcast.
Yeah, I don't care. I don't know anything about the Xbox. I don't want to talk about the Xbox, you know.
No,
the Xbox, Microsoft, Halo was on it. Yeah. It was like a computer, but it was a system.
Yeah.
I don't have multiplayer.
At that point, I stop having fun.
So we also have a new logo. We finally have a logo.
Yes. I'm very happy about this logo.
Ray Alderton worked on it. Very nice guy. He really wants nothing in return. Ray's one of the two artists who did the artwork for the 5th anniversary cliffhanger video for the intro last year. Excellent job. So this is our little, we have to do a little live read. I want to do live reads to be cool, but he wants us to promote, I guess there's a local game store he likes in Georgia. So, are you in Georgia? Is GameStop bumming you out? Super Gator Games. No gators, just games. If you go for gators, you might be insane. Retro cards, accessories, and even bleeding edge next gen. Super Gator Games has it. Good prices, solid selection, and knowledgeable staff. Two locations, a short drive from the metro Atlanta area in Hiram and in Noonan. Super Gator Games. I want to give him a tech shout out. It's called Super Gamer Games. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. That was my instruction. And you can go see him on Facebook by searching for Super Gator Games with GAMZ Games.
The place sounds cool. Your live reads suck.
We shall see for the NES Marathon.
Yeah, okay.
Also because my voice is still not fully recovered.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's going on with all those E.T. carts found in Alamogordo, New Mexico, Ian?
It's kind of cool, actually. After the E.T. dig, a lot of people were kind of curious as to what was going to go on with the cartridges. People were talking about, were they going to be for sale? You know, were people going to start trying to sell, you know, cartridges online as cartridges that were, you know, pulled from the dump site? And actually, they are the property of Alamogordo. And they're going to sell about 800 of them through various auctions, fundraisers, and they are going to sell some actually through an online, I believe a county store, like an online store. And then they're going to keep about 500 of them as mementos. They're going to give some away to museums around the world that want them. So it's a way for them to raise the city themselves to raise a little bit of revenue. I'd also like to think that because they're all coming from one source, at least initially, the initial sales of these, why don't you watch yourself there, big guy? I would like to think the initial sales of these...
I'm lowering the volume because you're blowing out my eardrums, yeah?
I don't... Whatever. I'd like
initial sales!
Yeah. I'd like to think that, you know, this will cut down on scammers because you'll know what to look for.
Yes.
There's only a few places where you can get them initially, and yes, eventually you will have people, after this sale is long done, that, you know, you might run into a scam, but hopefully it'll come with a certificate or something.
Oh, yeah. I think they'd have to have it signed by whoever was involved with the dig. It looks like they only had 1,300 that they discovered, at least that they dug up. 1,300.
Well, 13 of the ET, at least.
Yeah. But it sounds like they didn't get out to tens of thousands. I don't think they ever cracked that cement layer, supposedly, that was there that was covering up the like a big lot of them.
Well, the other thing that they said was there were other places, but basically they did not have a lot of time to dig. It was basically get it right or don't get it at all. I remember that being said when the initial story came out. So they didn't have many chances to dig. There were other spots that they said that they were supposed to be, but they didn't get the chance or the license to excavate there.
So if there's 800 of them, they'd be smart to number each certificate. Right. So yes, if they're sold, again, you know which one is which. Versus some asshole throwing his copy in the dirt, a new ET cart, which you can get for like a dollar, throw it in the dirt and say, this is one of them, you know.
Most of them look like they came out of a dump anyways.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, that would be smart. I don't know what these are going to sell for. Do you have any interest in owning one as a piece of history or not really?
You know what? Actually, when I was reading it, and I've never been a person who had a ton of love for the 2600. Now, the 5200 I love.
No one should love the 5200.
I love the 5200. I kind of would, depending on what they wanted for them. I think it's kind of neat, depending on how they present it, package it, what you get with it. It's an interesting piece of game history. It's a movie that I'm not hugely fond of on a system that I don't particularly care for, but the story is cool.
You're not fond of the movie? What a shock that a beloved children's movie that would not warm your black heart.
It made me very sad as a kid. I haven't watched it as an adult. Oh,
because he left?
It was really sad for me to watch that movie as a child.
What made you sad?
The whole movie made me sad when he was like all sick and sad and dying and, oh my God, in the hospital. I'm getting all upset about it right now. If I watched it and I was an adult, maybe I'd like it a lot better. This is not me being like cold and affected. This is the movie was too traumatizing for me as a child.
Which could be worse, actually, because you took it the way no other kid probably took the movie. But yeah, this is cool. Like I said, I saw the documentary that Microsoft Studios is putting out. Is it even out by now? And this is probably something that you'll see, I guess, once these are put online. There'll be a flurry. If I had to guess how much each is going to go for, it depends. If they do like a Dutch auction for 800, you'll get some asshole probably try to buy like 200 himself, 300 try to resell.
Right.
I guarantee you. That happened with the Turok Rage Wars a few years ago. Out of the 100 or so, 150, I'm sure a couple of assholes bought like 30 or 40 each, you know.
Yeah.
So they can keep them and try to sell them now for like, they sold for $20, now try to sell them for like 200 each. You know, I'm sure there's guys that just want to, it's capitalism, you do what you want. Yeah, you're still a douchebag. I don't care if it's capitalism or communism, whatever.
Throat your fist. I actually had a guy call once who had a gray cartridge of Turok Rage Wars, and he asked me how much I'd give for it. And I said, I don't know. I said, I'm not particularly interested in it. And he was like, well, I'm looking for at least 150.
Yeah,
so and I said, go elsewhere.
You can look for however much you want. Doesn't mean you're going to get it from Ian at Luna Video Games. Two locations in San Diego. I'm doing Ian's live read.
Poorly.
We never do a Luna live read for the marathon, do we?
We don't.
We should do that this year. We're going to change it. I'm going to write up my own.
Oh, no, we do it for the marathon.
Oh, we do?
Yeah.
Oh, we do. Okay.
Yeah.
So, in closing, I guess, these are interesting. I'm just interested to see how it plays out with the auction, how they're going to release them, basically.
Sure.
All right. So, Marvel's had a kick-ass year with movies.
It's only going to get better.
Captain America Winter Soldier was fan-fucking-tastic. One of the best Marvel movies.
Indeed.
Guardians of the Galaxy, fan-effing-tastic again. Without the cursing.
Still pissed that I didn't go see that a second time in theaters.
I saw it a second time and it was just
I really wanted to. We just didn't have time.
So, they announced if you can do Guardians of the Galaxy, you can do any Marvel property. Just about. It's that freaking out there and zany. But this isn't a zany, but this is a character that in prior decades was more popular, but this is like a nice solid B-level Marvel character, Doctor Strange.
Yes, one of my favorites.
So they've announced this. It's set for 2016. They announced the director. They're rumored for Doctor Strange, a couple of guys. Joaquin Phoenix was rumored, who'd be a strong choice. He's a great actor. And Benedict Cumberbatch, who is the hot actor right now for everything.
I think Benedict Cumberbatch could do a good Strange, especially... Well, they're already saying they're filming this in the UK.
Yes.
The Dark Horse, though, was the one that made me really excited. I mean, I'm sure we won't see him, but goddamn do I love John Hamm.
Do you really?
I love,
you love Mad
John
Men?
Hamm. Well, I love Mad Men, but like as a person, John Hamm just seems like a really decent guy.
He's usually really good in like Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, he's funny.
He's down to earth.
But that's the only problem. Like, as much as I would love for him to get the role, now that I've seen like the humorous side of him, I don't know if I could see him as Doctor Strange, who's generally not a particularly funny character.
Sure. So do you think? How do you think audience would take this character? This isn't like. On paper, it's kind of weird having Doctor Strange. He has, like, you know, the netherworld and the mysticism. And how do you think that would play out? Like, how would you think, like, a big battle would play out with the effects and like, all the Ditko type of, like, weird colors and everything?
I'm really hoping we get, like, a late 60s psychedelic look, but, sure. You know, with a modern effect, you know, with the modern effects palette. I think that could be... I mean, that's what I'm really looking forward to. Because Doctor Strange always had good storylines. Interesting storylines that other superheroes didn't touch on. Because it was more into mysticism and the occult. But the artwork that Ditko did, weird guy. But the artwork he did was fantastic. And I feel like that has to be represented in the movie to do it justice. What I do like about the movie as well is a lot of people are saying that they're going to ditch the origin story of Strange.
I think they should.
Which is bold, but I would hope they do. I would hope they do because we've seen so many movies now that have ditched origin stories, like, say, Dread, Dread doesn't really have an origin, but you get enough backstory if you surround them with good side characters that can work, that can coax background details out of them.
What I know about Doctor Strange is that his origin isn't as essential to his character as, say, the origin of Spider-Man when Uncle Ben gets killed, or Captain America and what they stand for. It's not as deeply integral that you have to see it as much. They'll probably have a short flashback sometime in the film to it or something like that, which is fine.
They did it
with the Daredevil movie 2003. They did a 5-minute flashback, and that worked out fine without going into the entire thing.
Or like I'm referring to in something like Dread, you know, a side character will ask Strange, you know, what was he like as a kid or something as they're traveling to a dimension, and, you know, he'll explain, you know, basically what happened.
So this
they'll get to it.
So this is Scott. Derrickson has been announced to direct it. Interesting choice. Marvel really goes for these guys that they think are going to just hit it right off the tee. Like going for Shane Black for Iron Man 3, a guy who's a witty writer.
Or Gunn for something more punky like Guardians of the Galaxy.
Sure. So Derrickson has written and directed a lot of, like, horror movies the past 5-6 years. Stuff like Deliver Us from Evil. Stuff like Sinister, I guess Sinister 2 he's on right now. He wrote The Exorcism of Emily Rose, which I think was very well received when that came out. Which I think is based upon the actual exorcism that The Exorcist was based on.
It was a good movie. It was a courtroom drama, which kind of left a lot of people feeling bummed.
So this guy doesn't have a huge amount of directing. He's only directed, looks like, 3 or 4 mainstream movies. Exorcism of Emily Rose, Day the Earth Stood Still, the remake, which I don't know anything about that. Sinister, which was a horror movie that came out. So I'm going to trust Marvel at this point. They haven't really gone wrong so far. You might disagree with Edgar Wright with Ant-Man, but I mean, so far...
No, I wanted Edgar Wright to do Ant-Man. The fact that Edgar Wright left Ant-Man leaves me zero interest in Ant-Man.
Doesn't mean it won't be bad, though. But so I'm looking forward to this just because this will be... different. How Guardians of the Galaxy was different from all the other Marvel movies, this will also be different from all the other Marvel movies. So, we'll see what happens. And on the note of superhero movies, a couple months ago, our most successful CU podcast video ever...
is it that one?
...was the Deadpool leaked test footage that I guess we have like 200,000 clicks on because people thought that was the footage. No, it was us talking about the footage. It wasn't supposed to be clickbait. We didn't try for it to be clickbait.
Whatever, can't clickbait.
But real quickly, that footage was mostly all CG, but it was Ryan Reynolds, who was for 4 or 5 years has been rumored to be Deadpool. I mean, he was Deadpool in Wolverine Origins, X-Men Origins Wolverine in 2009. He loves the character. He has the snarky attitude for it. And so they haven't been able to get it off the ground forever, even though they had a great script, supposedly. For it. So they put out this test footage. The test footage was like a year ago or a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. It leaks out. Everyone loves it. And so what happened was, in the past couple days, is that Ryan Reynolds comes out and says, you know, he appreciates the support. He basically saying, oh, we didn't think we were crazy for backing, basically, we thought this idea would be viable, and basically your support showed us that. And then right afterwards, Fox confirms that they are greenlighting a Deadpool movie for 2016. I'm happy about that.
I'm happy about it. The character is one note, but it's a pretty funny note, and I've always enjoyed Deadpool in the one-shot comics, mm-hmm. the Deadpool team-ups, and, you know, a movie really works best when it's got one short story to kind of focus on, so I think they could really do something great with the movie that kind of keeps it, you know, flowing fast. A Deadpool movie is not going to benefit from any downtime. I mean, that needs to be, I mean, pretty much action from the get-go, but I bet you it'd be a pretty good ride.
Yeah, and I don't mind that. I mean, Fox only doesn't have a great record with Fantastic Four or the Daredevil movies from 10 years ago and Elektra, but they've come around on the last couple X-Men movies on the first class. The Wolverine was very good.
I still think Days of Future Past was phenomenal.
Was really good, and so those are fine. And plus, this is a movie that Marvel doesn't need. This isn't a character that meshes well. It wouldn't mesh well with Iron Man or, you know, those characters. It's fine to have a one-off movie with just Deadpool.
Yeah.
It works fine.
I mean, he shows up everywhere, but no one's going to boo-hoo that Deadpool can't be in the next Avengers movie.
No, they can't have a character breaking the fourth wall in the Marvel continuity. It would be too much.
So as long as they get a good director, I mean, this is going
to
be fine.
Director is going to be Tim Miller.
Okay, I don't know
I'm unfamiliar with him, but the script is by Zombieland writers Rhett Reese and Paul Waring. Zombieland had a pretty good script. It was humorous.
Zombieland was fantastic.
So that gives you confidence. Tim Miller, I'll look him up real quick. But no, I'm happy to see Ryan Reynolds get a chance, because Ryan Reynolds is an actor that he has kind of taken a downturn in his career in terms of a leading man, because a lot of his movies didn't do well that he was a star. Green Lantern didn't do that well. Then he's doing that RIPD that did not well. That pretty much bombed. That one came out, last year or the year before in the summer. Remember that one?
Yeah. It had Jeff Bridges in it, too.
And it still went nowhere. So, I mean, I this is something that I think will be a big hit. I think now the question is, though, is will this be R or PG-13? And will that matter that much?
I don't think it will. I mean, if you read the comics, like most comics, Marvel comics or DC, most of that stuff is PG-13 in nature. So you can do Deadpool. You can definitely do Deadpool in PG-13.
Blood, though. Not that much blood. You can't be hacking heads off.
Yeah, that's the weird thing about comics. You know, they're kind of iffy on using, you know, swear words and stuff like that in mainstream comics. Yet the blood and the guts are usually there, so it depends. I mean, I guess I'd prefer it to be an R, but I really think with the popularity of the character, they're going to have to hit it at a PG-13.
This gives me pause about the director. I just looked him up. He hasn't really done much. He's done two short films. He's directed in 2002, 2003. He wrote four things, all short films, in 2003 to 2006. He worked on the visual effects on Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. So I don't know how to take this, that they're hiring someone. I guess they must have confidence in him, but it's Fox, though. Fox doesn't have a great track record for this sort of stuff.
Well, the visual effects in Scott Pilgrim were fantastic.
Doesn't mean you can direct the movie.
Well, no, it doesn't. I'm just saying, like, I mean, I can at least give him a thumbs up on that. But, yeah, that's not really a huge resume to go off of.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see. I mean, I'm not holding on hope for the new Fantastic Four reboot next year. I think it's going to be awful.
I don't care who is doing Fantastic Four. I have no interest in it. I think that's part of the problem.
No, that's not part of it. You can do an interesting Fantastic Four movie. Frank, don't let Frank hear that.
Frank's already heard it. Frank and I have already chatted about Fantastic Four.
Fantastic Four can be very interesting if done right, especially since that would be in theory like a Guardians of the Galaxy. They're always doing stuff in space and fighting cosmic entities versus Earth. Whatever. That's the whole topic. Deadpool coming to you 2016. We'll see how it goes. So this was kind of weird. This was like how they do in real life with gun buyback programs, right, Ian?
Yeah, so we've got this digital gun buyback program that is going on in Marin County in California. And like a real gun buyback program, which is aimed to get guns off the streets, where they buy back guns, basically no questions asked, for cash.
Sure.
You know, and they tend to target poor neighborhoods and whatnot to get, you know, the weapons out of these areas and put real money in these people's hands that they can do something with. What they've started doing is they've started, like, buying back toy guns from kids or violent video games from kids for ice cream. And they're what they're saying behind it is that, you know, they want to take, at least with the toy guns, they want to take these tools of violence that they see, that kids would see in a domestic violence situation, perhaps, right?
Do they see guns in domestic violence?
Well, this is what
they're saying.
This is what they're talking about. Right. This is part of a domestic violence awareness program to kind of help kids learn early on, you know, the do's and don'ts of how to treat people. But while its heart is in the right place, I have a couple of problems with it. One, buying back fake toy guns and violent video games isn't really educating on domestic violence.
No, and I believe small children probably don't understand a lot of what domestic violence even is.
Right. You know what I mean? There needs to be actual education, and in the question is, how do you educate children on domestic violence? Well, there's other ways to do it than this. So it just seems
short-sighted.
Misfired. I just want to say it's missing its mark. You know, I think they want kids to see that they can do a similar thing that adults do, and they get a reward for it. But what's it actually teaching them? My biggest problem with this is that it brings up the correlation again that has never ever been solidly proven ever once, not once, that violent video games at all link to violent behavior in children. Mm-hmm. Now, what they're trying to stop is violent behavior in children, things that they might see in domestic violence, if they see domestic violence. But like we said, how does this tie into domestic violence? I don't see the tie. No. So I feel like...
How do toy guns, even...
Right.
Toy guns?
I feel like it's kind of... I mean, yes, we need to teach children about domestic violence. We do. This is not the way to do it. And furthermore, we don't need to drag out that old chestnut of a scapegoat video games again and kick it around a while. Because, frankly, do I like violent video games? Not really. But do I care if people play them? Have I read the reports? Do I think that they really have an impact on people who play them? No, I don't. And that's been shown time and time again in studies. And here we are, and they're once again correlating violent video games with real-life violence.
I'm trying to stay away from a whole liberal versus conservative thing on here, but this is... I don't understand. This to me ties...
Liberal. I think this is stupid as fuck.
This is, like, to me, about how dumb it is. The same thing when kids are now getting suspended in schools because they get a stick and point it as a gun, they get suspended. This is, like, total overreaction. Total overreaction. We all grew up with toy guns. I played Cowboys and Indians. I played... Not Cowboys, what am I, from the 50s? My dad played Cowboys and Indians. I played Army. I played Cops and Robbers. We had violent video games as kids. And growing up, I watched G.I. Joe. And again, yeah, it's never linked. There's no link. This is ridiculous. This is absolutely ridiculous. So they're going to... This doesn't include, like, Nerf guns?
Yeah.
What, who got hurt by a Nerf gun ever? That's why it's a Nerf. That's why it's Nerf. You don't get hurt with Nerf.
It's just the symbolism of it, but like I said, I don't agree. It's just, it's dumb. It's not a matter of people actually getting hurt by Nerf, jackass, of course. No one did. That's the point. It's supposed to be the safe, fun, soft dart foam. But
I'm looking at this article on Forbes about, the Columbine killers, when they played Doom, that was a very violent thing, how they played a mod, like you die when you ran out of bullets. These kids, at least the main kid, was so fucked up to begin with that... People don't understand that when people have these, like, outlets for things, it's not causation. It's just a correlation of them going towards outlets that associate with them. So if you're messed up and ultra-violent, you'll probably play violent games because that's what you like. But it doesn't mean that because I play ultraviolet games, I am going to be ultraviolet.
Right. It's the predisposition is probably already there to play them. I mean, the article says it perfectly right here, which is kind of what I was trying to say and rambling a bit. And yet, this pairing almost seems to trivialize domestic violence itself. Unlike toy guns and video games, domestic violence does direct, obvious physical and emotional harm to children, the effects of which are long-lasting. The data is there, where the link between violence and video games has never been firmly established.
I mean, hell, they should be giving out Nerf guns to these parents then. They can beat each other up with a Nerf bat, and no one really gets hurt.
Oh, Jesus Christ, Pat. You're fucking ridiculous. All right, so that's guns for ice cream.
That's just ridiculous. I can go for some ice cream right now, though. So Nintendo is celebrating 125 years. So that's 1889. I remember that random issue of Nintendo Power. Probably, I guess it was in 89 when they mentioned that it was 100th birthday. Do you remember that? I remember that, and they did mention it about being it was a card company.
I do, and I remember that issue because that's where I learned. You know, I think in a lot of, not now, but for those of us who grew up with a Nintendo, I mean, Nintendo did not exist before the NES. You know, we didn't. I mean, if you had a Game & Watch or something like that, you knew them from that. But
or saw Donkey Kong, maybe.
Yeah, you always knew Nintendo is something that was video game related.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I mean, the start with the Hanafuda cards and things like that, that was news to people like us when we read that.
Yeah, I think cool. I think what this tells you, a company lasting 125 years, especially one starting in the late 1800s in Japan, which was still semi-feudal by the late 1800s. Yeah. You still had samurai in some area. To go from that to now, when think about in human history how much has changed in the past 125, how radically that's changed versus any other period in history, 125 years would be nothing. This has been like millennia compared to those other times. The fact of the matter is, this company started with playing cards, transitioned into toys, electronic games, you know, love testers, to light gun games in arcades. Before, you know, remember they had Duck Hunt in the 70s. Duck Hunt actually shooting off of projector. Wild Gunman shooting guys that were
They didn't look cute or anything. It was literally a shadow projection with a light gun.
And then progressing and finding their way into the market for Donkey Kong after Radar Scope failed and how that was a huge, massive success. And then finding their way only a couple years later in Japan to Famicom, one of the most successful systems ever, especially in Japan. And then Nintendo is not just a survivor. They see, I guess they've always seen what sells, what's popular, and they ran towards it.
Here's the thing. Nintendo has always been able to adapt and move along with time. I mean, they've been around for 125 years, which is why it's so sad that someone told me today that because of the Xbox One and PS4, the Wii U is just going to sink Nintendo.
I mean, yeah, they're dead.
Nintendo is finished. They're
all going to commit seppuku. They're going to go outside Nintendo headquarters and just go.
Oh man, the company is over, dude. They overstepped their bounds. So 125 years is a really good number to end on, Nintendo. But
you're done.
I'm sorry, you've made some minor mistakes, and you are never going to recover from them.
Because you don't have third-party support on the Wii U, you're absolutely finished.
Never mind that it's the only console I bother to play.
Never mind that they have, you know, so much freaking money in the bank, you know. They'll have to go back to doing love testers and little toys.
They can sell them to the Xbox and PS4 players.
Well,
mean of me. I do want a PS4.
Well, what happened is Nintendo will put out a love tester on the tablet, and then 6 months later, Xbox One and PS4 will do it.
Yes, exactly.
After making fun of it.
So, speaking of Nintendo, we also just recently saw a game lot on eBay. I believe it was 883 games go for $15,001.
We usually don't talk about stuff like this, like auctions closing. Usually they don't really mean much to us.
No. And it's not for a complete series of NES games. Which
huge
is,
and very rare 883 NES game lot. That's the name of it.
But this is important for the point that I want to bring up. So it's 883 games, which is about 120, 130 more than what would be
773,
roughly considered a full set if you consider licensed and unlicensed. Right. So, and it's not complete. So there's going to be a lot of doubles. Well, there's going to be about 100 doubles in there. What's interesting about this to me, and I realize that this is just popularity increasing things, but I remember the first time I saw a complete set of Nintendo games go up on eBay, and that was right around when eBay first started, like 98. TSR's NES Pit, we're all talking on the message board, they link it, and we're all fucking blown away, because this complete set of Nintendo games goes for like $4,000, yeah. And we're like, oh my god, that's an insane amount of
and
money.
That includes Stamets at the time.
Yeah, that includes everything at the time, you know, complete, you know, everything.
And I'd say at the time that was overpriced.
Yeah, I want to say it might not have even been that much. I'm just saying $4,000, like, to kind of...
Yeah.
Put an upper buffer on that. It might have been $3,000. So, you know, now here we are at the height of Nintendo collecting popularity, and, you know, we've got a not even complete set selling for $15,000.
Which is absolutely insane, because that's way overpriced.
Yes.
That's not even if you had stadium events in there, it's still overpriced.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know what's going on with this. I don't know if this was even paid for.
Yeah, but the problem is, to me, is it... with how crazy we've seen things, it doesn't look high enough to me to be a fake bid.
Like, you think, I mean, so?
It's overpriced, but it doesn't look high enough to me to be fake.
Some have boxes, but not many. I'm looking at this, like, 6-in-1 is complete. Okay, that's like a few $100s right there.
Right.
But again, we're not far out of the realm where you still can't get a huge chunk of games for under $10 each.
I think that, well,
you can,
yeah,
you can probably get 450 games for $10 or less still. And a lot of those are dollar games in bulk, you know, all the sports ones. Well, just average it out at least.
No, sure. I can see that.
You can get, hell, I'll say you can get 550 games for $5,000, probably.
I would say you could do that.
Yeah, so then you're left with 200 games, 220 games that would cost you $10,000? No, not even close. Not even close. Because they're not even going to average out at 150 each. You know, they're not even... No, they're not...
So here's my question to you, and I have an estimate in my head.
They wouldn't average out at $50 each, the last 200 games.
But yeah, so here's my question. This is... I have a guesstimate, but we always talk against it. But then what do you think a person who just wants to buy the complete collection, basically spends a year on eBay, what do you think they could do it for?
And plus, those price I just said is if you bought them individually, not in a bulk lot.
Well, that's what I'm saying. What do you think a person could buy a Nintendo collection for?
If they bulk lotted it, like they went online and did it how, like, I basically did it for the most part. Just eBay or just everything?
Just, like I said, an eBay buyer who wants to buy an entire collection.
Strictly eBay.
Strictly eBay.
Even go
buy it now.
I guess you'd have to. Does this include selling back the doubles you get, or no?
No, let's say individually. I'm talking maximum amount of money you could spend if you did it individually, buy it now. I still don't know if you would get to $15,000.
No, you wouldn't. That's my whole point. You would.
That's what I'm trying to say. What do you think it would actually be?
It'd be half of that. Okay. I think it'd be half of that.
Yeah, I was going to say 8 if you did strictly buy it now, no doubles.
Because you can find $2 buy it nows for, like, you know, bases loaded. You know, we're not counting shipping, are we? I'm not going to count shipping.
No.
I don't think that should go into it.
Yes, everyone wants to listen to us quickly calculate shipping.
No, but I'm saying, does that count when you talk about, bases loaded is a dollar game, well, but with shipping it's $4.
Yeah,
I'm counting also, like, bulk lots, because you can get, like, 25-game bulk lots for still, like, $30 if they're mostly commons.
Sure. And let's keep in mind that a lot of sellers have started to eliminate shipping from their prices.
Sure.
At least I've noticed that, as long as they're not overseas.
Yeah, this is double the price of what it should be, I think.
So, but at the same point, you see a lot of collectors.
So this is not a reseller buying this. There's no way it's a reseller.
It's not a reseller, yet it's just not... I mean, I know it's overpriced by probably double. I just don't see this being stupidly high enough. Here's my guess. Lots of new collectors, lots of new blood in the collecting scene. I don't see them, because I see it at the store. These are not people who save up money over the course of 6 months to get that cart they really want. These are people with money. So, I mean, to this guy, he looks at it and goes, well, okay, shit, I'm only going to end up missing 50 games, and I've got the cash, so click. But it was bidding. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know.
I wish the identities were not hidden, because it'd be nice to see how many different bidders there were. If it was just two or three that were just both insane, or if there's any shill stuff going on here. I have no idea.
Sure.
It could be shill bidding. I don't know. But to all the collectors out there, this is not the way to get... Plus, there's no joy in it. We always say, there's no joy in that.
No.
This person's going to sell this. They're going to sell it. I don't know when they're going to do it. They're going to be out of it.
Yes. It's a tourist buying this. They're going to be out of the they're going to lose... They're going to play every game. They're going to decide that they're
not... Are they?
Maybe. They might. And then either they're going to play every game and decide that they don't care anymore and sell it all back off.
Unless there's some rich guy that says, I want a wall of NES games. I want it now.
Maybe he's paving his bathroom tile with NES games.
That could be my new job. I can procure you an NES set if you pay me. I will get you an NES set. I will go out and find it. That'd be a fun job, like Indiana Jones searching for an NES set. But would you get the license or unlicensed Temple of Doom?
Both. You have to have everything.
Depends if you want to get the variants. Right. We'll end that one on a whimper.
Yeah. So, continuing with our Festival de Nintendo, the Smash demo came out last week.
Sure.
And, last week for Platinum and this week for everyone else. And I got a code for myself and one for Vani from people whose names I'll keep private because I don't know if they... I don't know if they want to be private or not, but thank you to both the people who gave me those two codes. Anyways, the demo is a lot of fun. It only gives you one level, as most people who are listening to this by now probably know. It's a time game, not a stock game, but it does give you a pretty neat selection of characters, because it gives you Mario, Pikachu, and Zelda, which are three classics that a lot of people like, and then it gives you two of the newer characters. It gives you the Animal Crossing Villager, and it gives you Mega Man.
Which are two ones that are
two
played
new,
a lot. Yeah.
Which are two new characters.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm having more fun with it than I actually remember having with Smash Brothers in the past. Maybe it's because I've been playing it with Vani. Maybe it's because I'm just trying to get into it a little bit more deeply while still having fun with items and stuff. But I've played quite a bit of the demo. And I've been using Pikachu, who has always been one of my...
Shock.
Which has always been one of my mains.
Shock, use the cute little freaking fuzzy 4-year-old would want to use this character.
Yeah,
yes.
I wish I was Pikachu.
I wish I was an asexual yellow little animal.
Yeah, electric mouse. They can be male and female.
God, I don't want to picture that.
Anyways, you know, I've already noticed, you know, certain balance tweaks, like, you know, when Pikachu calls down the thunder, it doesn't hit as wide of a range. Which is probably good for most people that I would fight against. Vani's been using the villager almost entirely because that's who she loves the fact that they put the villager in there.
Seems like a little complicated character to use.
Yes.
Almost like Ness a little bit, how a little harder to jump around, but probably very powerful you can master.
Yeah, but she definitely wants to get good with villager. She's been beating my ass at that game pretty solidly, which is unsurprising. But yeah, I've been enjoying it a lot, and... I'm really looking forward to it, and I will definitely be buying both the 3DS and the Wii U versions.
Do you like the thumb pad? How does it feel?
Well, I think the thumb pad feels fine, but you haven't talked yet on this topic, so go ahead, because I know you don't like it.
It feels mushy. It feels like... The best way to describe it is that it almost feels like there's too much time to go from the middle to the edge. And the time for it to retreat back, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
It's just a little bit slower than using a joystick. You know what I mean? So it's like, it doesn't feel as responsive to me. I'm sure if I played it for a lot, I get used to it. But it just doesn't feel right. It just didn't feel natural to me versus using a thumb pad. Or you can't use a D-pad because there's analog in this. But I think that's why, I guess, they're going to come out with the new 3DS. So people, if you want to be an expert 3DS player, you're going to have to get the, you know... Get the new 3DS.
Not necessarily. I mean, plenty of people do fine with the Smashes where you just hit the direction and the button at the same time. I think this is why demos exist.
So you can play through it.
Yeah, I don't know if Nintendo will change anything, but really, that's a minor tweak. That's a very minor tweak that you can patch, which is simply change it so that the analog has a more D-pad, a more digital style feel, so that there's less throw before action,
or change the sensitivity.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
that would be cool. Yeah. I can maybe get on board with that. So maybe that you don't have to go to the entire edge in order to do the. Usually, what in Smash is like three different sort of speeds to when you crawl, or actually four almost, where you go really slow, medium, and then you run.
But yeah, change the sensitivity around, and I mean, I've heard, you know, because it's not a standard analog stick, because you are slamming the entire weight of it into the support.
Sure.
There have been people online talking about how they've broken their circle sticks, but I mean, to that I say that's not really Nintendo's fault.
No.
That's stop raging out so hard on Smash
yeah,
Brothers.
That's not Nintendo's fault, because you can pull off the move without really freaking forcing
right,
the thing.
Right. There's no
if that was wear and tear. If that was wear and tear, that's fine, but I don't think that's where I think that's just being really
yeah
forcing it.
There's no sensor on the stick part of the analog. I mean, it's not detecting your smash by you literally smashing the circle yeah. pad, you know.
That's silly. But again, I don't think I would buy a new system or new handheld just for the one game. But this is still going to sell like hotcakes either way, cuz even the fact that I didn't play it with Pro Jared. He actually got the full one early. The full version. But I was tempted just to say, oh, we'll just walk around and play it against each other. So you go to these conventions, how awesome is that? You just pull out the 3DS, and you can have five other people around you ready to play it. You know what I mean? That to me sounds really freaking cool. And I mean, I know you can do that with all the Mario Karts on the DS and 3DSs, but for a fighter, that's really cool.
Well, in Smash is Smash. I mean, it's hugely popular. I've kind of noticed some of the play on, like, the Mario Kart 7 has dropped since, which was the 3DS one, mm-hmm. dropped since Mario Kart 8 came out, because Mario Kart 8 is
amazing.
Way more balanced and far yeah. better. However, if they're going to keep, at least mechanics-wise, both the 3DS and the Wii U versions essentially the same, yeah, you're going to... I think it's very easy to sell even the curious, which is kind of what I am, because I've mm-hmm. never fully jumped into Smash. It's really easy to sell the curious on two versions based on the fact that we've got one for when I have people who come over on Sundays, and then we've got one for MAGFest or when, for my buddies hang out, because my, you know, two of my coworkers, Vonnie and I, hang out all the time. We all have 3DSs on us. Of course we're going to have Smash Brothers.
You can sit on the couches and play and have your own screen, and
yeah.
you don't have to share the screen like you would with the Wii U. One thing with the Wii U, you probably have one person with a pad, one person looking at the TV, which would be cool too. So I'm looking forward to the Wii U one. I really think that'll be cool as well.
I do too, especially because my faith in Nintendo has been restored with how well the online works in Mario Kart 8.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I feel like the online is going to be a lot better than the Wii version of Smash Brothers.
Now, did they get rid of the single player mode like they had in the Wii version? Like they had a whole storyline? Is that pretty much gone?
Yes, they did. And my understanding of it was, and it sounds stupid, and I could be wrong, but my understanding is that they said they weren't going to do the story mode because when they did it on the Wii, all the cutscenes got uploaded
beforehand,
and people could just watch them instead of playing through the game. So why would they make a story mode? I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's translation or just weird logic, but I mean, that just goes over yeah. my head. I don't get it.
Nintendo's kind of weird about that stuff. It's they can do whatever they want, though. It's their product, obviously. But I think they're being a little too secretive. I mean, they already have, like, what is it called? They're not allowing people to speak out on even the characters that are in the game, like Secret Cat. Like, they're doing weird shit, telling, like, reviewers they can't tell, like, what's unlockable, even, or things like that. Or they're just being weird. Whatever. We're talking about it, but Duck Hunt Dog is confirmed, obviously, at this point, so that's really cool.
Yeah.
They're taking a chance. They got Rob back in there, so...
I don't think Rob left. Rob was in the last one.
But, I mean, people thought he'd be gone.
Oh, okay.
The only ones they got rid of were the Ice Climber people, which they said, they actually gave a good reason why they're eliminated.
Hmm.
They basically said that they didn't think they could pull off if four people selected it, having eight characters on the screen.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean,
which makes sense. It could have been too much.
I can't remember the other person they eliminated. God, there was one other.
Some guy with a sword, probably.
It upset me that they got rid of the Ice Climbers, because I just thought it was a cute idea.
It was
how
cute.
It worked.
I would have just made it to one then.
But I also know they were exploitable characters
yes.
in the GameCube version. And so, I mean, you know, it's like any fighting game. I know we've had the discussion, is it a fighting game? But like any fighting game, roster changes happen.
It's a fighting game.
Yeah, you would have argued that about 6 months ago.
It's a party fighting game, but it's a fighting
Whatever.
Game.
Whatever.
I never said it's not a fight. What genre do you think it is? It's a fighting game.
Macaroni.
Macaroni. But no, I mean, they've only dropped a few characters over all these iterations, so that's commendable that they kept this huge roster of
them. Well, and that's what I'm getting at.
3-4 dozen characters now? Jesus.
I play tons of fighting games, and boo-hooing over the loss of a character is part of liking that type of game.
Yeah.
You get over it.
Maybe they'll bring it back for the Super Wii U, or whatever dumb name they decide to do the next next Nintendo console in order to not sell as many copies as they should of it. We're going to talk some wrestling. We haven't done this in a while.
We are, and I'm kind of excited about it. So, Night of Champions, I have not watched the whole pay-per-view.
Awesome.
But I will say that what I watched was great, so I'm going to let Pat take over very quickly here. But
well, I'm going to talk about the main event and what that's going
to
lead up to.
I just wanted to talk very quickly about the tag match was fantastic. The Usos, Stardust, and Goldust, that was really, really great. I love the fact, and this is mostly from my time watching NXT. Fucking watch NXT.
I should watch it.
You really need
I did watch Kenta arrival. They changed his name. I think it was his decision for some reason.
No, they made it look like his decision. They change everyone's name so that they can own the gimmick.
That's ridiculous. He's one of the biggest stars in the world, and Kenta is such an awesome name. It's like Madonna. Kenta. Yeah. We'll change the name to Iwata something that... So generic, you know.
He said it was like
it was his idol or whatever.
Anyway,
I don't know. The whole point was I saw him come in. If they play him right, and if they bring Kenta in as not your stereotypical Japanese wrestler with the chopstick song, if they have him just come in as a badass guy who basically Daniel Bryan, CM Punk took the moves from that guy, it'll be awesome.
CM Punk basically took everything from Kenta. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so the tag match was great. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail. I'm just happy to see that the tag division is exciting again in the WWE. I never liked tag matches in the WWF because they booked them so poorly and they had such shitty tag teams. But between NXT and the lower card tag wrestlers of the WWE, we have really good tag matches again with great flow and good psychology. So I do like that.
Yeah, I'd say the past few years the tag team division has come back.
And then I did see the whole Seth Rollins come out, you know, and obviously Roman Reigns couldn't wrestle because of emergency surgery, so they had, you know, Dean Ambrose's return. And as a huge fan of Dean Ambrose, you know, Vonnie and I just watched and laughed as, you know, this psycho is just going apeshit and jumping off of everything. And, that was great. So that leads into the main event, which I already know about. So, I mean, please talk about.
I figured that Lesnar would keep the title. It wouldn't make any sense for him to destroy Cena and then lose it next month.
But how are they going to do it interestingly? That was my
question. I wouldn't have booked it like this. The more I think about it, the less I like it, just because it makes Lesnar look weak and he made him look so strong.
Well, good. Let him look weak. He's a piece of shit.
Separate real person from storyline, Ian.
I think he's a piece of shit in both.
Okay. Oh, I disagree. Anyway, so basically, Cena got in, over the course of the match, went back and forth this time out. He didn't just get destroyed. Got in like four AAs, Attitude Adjustments finisher. The first one only got like a one count, supposedly. And then the more and more got on, he hit him more and more. And so after he hit the fourth one, he didn't go for back over the pin. And then Rollins comes in with the Money in the Bank and smashes Cena, DQ, but then tries to cash it in against Lesnar, which is really, at least that seemed like a pretty cool twist.
Right.
Because Lesnar was kind of the authority's guy to beat Cena, which was going to be Daniel Bryan before Daniel Bryan got hurt. But right before the bell rang, though, Ambrose comes back and beats the shit out of him. So after, I think Cena does too, though. Whatever. So the whole point is that you Cena was made to look strong to come back. The problem is that on Raw, you have Cena come out and say, "I had the title won." You can't say that because then it makes your champion look weak, especially when Lesnar was not on Raw, Heyman wasn't on Raw either, which is just inexplicable. Have a night after the pay-per-view, you don't have the champion.
Well, that's why you don't put the fucking belt on someone like Lesnar, who isn't going to be on Raw.
Well, then you can't blame Lesnar. That's not his fault, but they should have had Heyman there.
Yes, it is. He's dictating that. He's dictating that in his conditions.
Lesnar's not dictating being the champion. That's up to the WWE to put the belt on him or not.
He had some say in his comeback as to what he got to do.
No, because he didn't get the champ. He hasn't gotten close to the championship the last 3 years. So he's been a part-timer.
So he's choosing to. So he's not the one choosing to not be on TV basically ever.
No, he is. He has that in his contract, the number of appearances. But WWE could have said, screw you, we're not putting the title on you. But there's no one else to put the title on to be interesting right now. There's no one else to build towards WrestleMania. So basically, this is what it comes down to, though, is now the WWE is in trouble. Because they had, with CM Punk gone...
Can I just get this out? Can I just say this right now, please? Have you ever, like, eaten a lot of fiber and taken, like, the perfect shit? You know, it's just perfect.
Well, I don't know what constitutes perfect shit, but where are you going with this, Ian?
That's what Lesnar looks like, only pale. This is my main reason why I don't like Brock Lesnar. He looks like a turd in the ring. And he's a turd in real life.
You understand he was a champion amateur wrestler, right?
Yes, so I do understand that. Yeah, I get it. He's also fucking boring in the ring.
You remember the awesome matches he put on the stick with Angle? The incredible matches he put on with Angle?
I'm
going
to hand that to Angle.
Oh, so it was just Angle then. It wasn't Lesnar at all.
Lesnar doesn't impress me.
Okay. You are in the vast minority when it comes to that opinion.
I'm in the vast minority that Lesnar is unimpressive.
Yes. Oh, yeah. You definitely are. But here's the problem. Before you got me sidetracked with talk about fiber shit. What are you, ABGN? So basically now, Brian's gone. The good news is that Brian, supposedly Daniel Bryan, does not, our good neighbor, Pacific Beach, does not have to get a second surgery, which is very good because that would probably push his back 3 more months. So I think how it looks now is he might be back for Survivor Series. If not Survivor Series, he'll be back for the Rumble. So... Roman Reigns had emergency surgery on Saturday, the day before, hernia surgery. Bad. It sounded like, I mean, my dad had hernia surgery where it was like, yeah, I'll make an appointment for 2 weeks. No, he had to be rushed to the hospital. Mm-hmm. So something like got ruptured. If you know what a hernia is, it's basically your freaking intestines
poking out through
like your freaking abdomen. That's not good. Yeah. Wow. I've pulled my groin before and thought it was a hernia because it's like that painful. But no, it's worse. I think it's worse. So he's out for several months.
Yeah.
He's out. This is a hernia where like this isn't like a simple sports hernia where guys are there lifting, they get it and they're back within like a couple months. This sounds like something where he can't even be like doing anything for months. So it's bad for him because he was getting, you know, big pops in the crowd. And I personally don't think he was ready to be a main eventer. People were saying, oh, he'll face Lesnar at WrestleMania. So now they're in a pickle. Because now your options are you have to push someone up to that main event between now and WrestleMania to go for the title. And who is that? Is that Ambrose? I'd say, sure, give him a chance. See what happens if you want to do that. If you want to turn Bray Wyatt face, give him a chance. I don't see that happening personally. Daniel Bryan comes back. And you do what you should have did last year, have him win the Rumble and reclaim his belt that was stripped from him. So he has a right to try to get it back.
Right.
Basically, like in the UFC, if a guy gets injured and they give it to an interim champ, when that guy comes back from injury, he goes for it. Daniel Bryan, at least in the storyline, that makes sense that he has a chance. And the authority can say, well, you're a B-plus player. You have to earn it. So they put him in the Rumble, which would be great. And having him versus Lesnar would be great. WrestleMania, I said that before, would be an awesome match. Or... you get The Rock back and have two part-timers, which you would love, go for the championship. I don't see that happening.
I like The Rock, but I don't like part-timers. And
especially if The Rock got injured after his last match with Cena last year, I don't see that happening.
I mean, the fact of the matter is they need someone now.
They don't have anyone.
I think Ambrose... Well, yeah, I don't know who they push up against Lesnar. I think...
they're going to have to feed Lesnar guys for the next 5-6 months. That's basically what it comes out to. But they don't have a choice.
I'm not all... I can't be all boo-hoo for them because they have plenty of good wrestlers that they could have built up that they've been shitting on.
Well, like Ziggler, you mean?
Cesaro? I do like Ziggler.
Cesaro was the probably biggest misfire I've seen the past... Well, before Daniel Bryan, before they corrected that, huge misfire with Cesaro.
I will admit right now, and it's not a popular thing, I kind of like Sheamus. I do. But that...
he's had his time, though.
He's had his time. Yeah. That match, the Cesaro-Sheamus match was one... I was getting so angry and like... I kind of had to explain it to Vonnie because she understands the wrestling perfectly, but... you do not let Cesaro have multiple offensive rushes like he did and have someone like Sheamus kick out every time because you have effectively buried that wrestler. They made him look weak as fuck.
He still looks strong most of the Raws. He manhandles people.
Yeah, but
the problem with Cesaro is that, again, And this goes back to, I would hate to be a professional wrestler, not just because the injury in your body. It sounds like you can be successful, get yourself over, and you still get buried. That's what I wouldn't be able to put up with. Because a guy like Cesaro, just from the fact that he has insane superhuman strength, he's the strongest guy, pound for pound. He got himself over because he's a good worker, because he always was on a good match. Then they finally give him a chance with that Battle Royal at WrestleMania. Freaking lifts the Big Show halfway across the ring. Not just throw him over, lifts him and walks with him. That's pure strength. It's ridiculous. And so he puts on good matches. Yeah, oh no, he's not the best in the mic. I don't care. He's decent at being that foreign sort of villain. But he was getting over as a face. They stick him with Heyman. Okay, fine. You want to make him heel again? That's fine. So what do they do with that? After a few months, they reverse that. And with no explanation, he's asked out. So they could have built that towards a whole even Cesaro versus Lesnar thing. You know, maybe them fighting over each other because they're both Paul Heyman guys. That's gone.
That's
now.
What I was really hoping for.
And now that's gone.
I really thought where it was going to go initially. Yeah. Because after WrestleMania, Lesnar, definite heel. Cesaro was already, I mean, full head face steam. Like, just I mean, he was yeah, just, he was going. And it's not even his strength. I mean, he is amazingly strong. But, you know, you watch the match from Night of Champions. He's pulling off moves he's never done before. Yeah. I mean, his move vocabulary, his ability to get around the ring. I mean, he's an insanely good wrestler. And he's losing to Sheamus. And like I said, I like Sheamus. But, he's 4 years ago.
This sounds like a political thing. This is what it sounds like. This sounds like a Ryback thing where Ryback was on top of the world and they cut him out from under him and said, you know, Ryback's been nowhere for the past like year and a half, 2 years. Whether or not you like the people, if they get over, you use the wrestlers that get over that make you money. Bottom line, that's how I run a wrestling business. I don't care who gets over. If you get over and people want to see you, you're going to be featured.
Yeah, and maybe that's why we're not running promotions. But, I mean, that's how I've always felt. It should be obvious. The people who get the most heel heat and the people who get the most face pop are the people who go over. And no, you don't always give the obvious outcome, but those are the people you push to the top. And
those are your headliners.
Those are who you make matches out with, you know?
Those are the ones that make money.
Right.
The money makers are the one that gets pushed. That's the problem, though, nowadays, is World Wrestling Entertainment isn't a wrestling company anymore. No. It's this huge conglomerate that does movies. It does a bunch of TV and apps. So the wrestling and pushing the wrestlers, that's like that doesn't even matter to that extent anymore. This isn't the 80s where that's how you make money solely is who's paying to see these events. That doesn't even matter. You know what I mean? The wrestling draws aren't what matter anymore. It's the media side of it. You know, it's the entertainment side of it. It's who can we put in a movie that will put direct to DVD, you know, as a tax write-off or whatever, which is a shame. So, yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. I'm still sticking with my prediction that Brian's going to come back and he'll headline against Lesnar next WrestleMania. I think that's the only thing right now that makes absolute sense to do.
And I'm just going to leave this on the last top, on this note, which I've said to you before. Every time I watch a WWE pay-per-view, I see a couple good matches, but I'm more and more disappointed. I am never disappointed when I watch NXT. Just fucking watch it. It's an hour a week.
Okay.
It's an hour a week. You watch Raw, sit there and you go, well, this is garbage.
No.
Don't watch the good wrestling.
Raw, the past, I'd say, 2 years, there's always at least one or two really good matches on Raw.
There's always at least two to four.
It went from a point where in the Attitude Era you'd have 2 minute matches. Now you might get a 20-25 minute match on Raw.
Is good.
You know, Raw at least the storylines might be crap. They might be pushing the right wrestlers, but you know you'll see a good. You might see Cesaro lose, but at least you'll see a good Cesaro match.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
But why are you guys talking about wrestling? It's fake.
It's fake.
You fucking
people
idiots.
People don't fucking understand shit.
Q&A time.
No, it's not.
No,
no,
that's right.
We are missing our
marquee topic.
Our marquee topic.
The main event.
All right, everyone. So
strap in.
Here's some fun stuff.
There's a lot to go with this, but
we're probably going to keep it pretty slim.
We'll try to synthesize the information here. This is very complicated.
All right, so here's what happened. Retron 5 gets announced. You all know what this is by now, but if you don't, it's a multi-system console that runs off of emulation as opposed to on-a-chip technology. When the Retron 5 was coming out, Pat and I had a lot of discussion about what the emulation was going to be done with. And we all kind of assumed that they could not possibly be writing emulators from the bottom
up. They weren't coding
too long.
They weren't coding multiple emulators.
They don't have the manpower. No. This would have to be they would have to be paying licensing fees to popular emulators, probably like, you know, SNES 9X.
Or Nestopia.
Or something like
that. FCEUX, which I use for NES. Yeah.
So, anyway, the Retron 5 gets cracked a couple days ago. And what do you know? Our friends at Hyperkin are totally using code that they basically stole and are making a profit off of. Under the explicit the user license agreements that say that they cannot. So, for instance, that example about SNES 9X, it is actually the emulator that is running in Retron 5. And no one got paid for it, no licensing was bought, and they are making money off of something that they explicitly cannot make money off of.
So
parts of their front end were stolen. I mean, this has potential to sink a company like...
This is civil suit stuff.
Right, and this is a lot of money potentially coming out of their pocket.
Because even if something is open source, doesn't mean you could do whatever you want with it. There are license agreements even for quote-unquote free software.
Well, lots of open source is to be used expressly under the conditions that you don't make money off of it.
So this is the problem with this. Besides the fact that they not only didn't license it, the fact that they're making a commercial product using this stuff, they didn't attribute any of it either.
No.
So Hyperkin got called out on this, and they finally released it, yesterday on their site, saying, finally, they should have did this up front, at the very least. They're using source code from the following open source projects, VBAM, Genesis Plug GX, FCEU, which I guess is part of the one FCUX, probably a version of it.
Yeah.
And SNES 9X, one of the oldest and best Super Nintendo emulators. Doesn't even say the rest of them, though.
That
they're missing a few systems here. The Game Boy ones, I have no idea. Anything else. And then one of the conditions for sometimes using these open sources is that you have to provide the source code that you're using.
Right.
And so they've now, on September 23rd, providing source code so people can look at it. They put out a message, Hyperkin. The source code is for each of these projects is copyright the respective authors who are identified in the corresponding source files. We endeavor to abide by the terms and conditions of each of the corresponding open source licenses. Should you be one of the developers of a direct legal representative of one of the copyright holders of any of the aforementioned projects and feel that the software is being used in violations of its license, then please get in touch with us via email to discuss the matter further. So they are hoping, probably, that nothing's going to happen at this. It's going to be, well, these are small guys that are not going to go after us.
They're playing dumb.
They're playing dumb.
They're playing dumb, and they're hoping that the people who hold the power to basically take them to court don't have the money to take them to court.
This is still... This is intellectual property. This just because you create an emulator, which is totally legal, by the way, I don't want to hear any bullshit like, whoa, emulators are legal. No, creating an emulator is totally legal.
Yes.
To create an emulator. The fact of the matter is, you create that, you own that intellectual property. That's yours. So you can decide what you do with it. So if you put a license on it saying, this is how it is to be used, it's free, but you cannot include it in a commercial product, that has to be abided by law.
Right. So
this isn't like, well, who cares stuff. This is legal stuff.
When you read that, their letter, they say, if you feel, they're totally playing dumb, as if they can't open their own fucking eyes and read. I mean, I haven't used an emulator in ages, but something like SNES 9X used to, like, open with, like, a little window that said, this cannot be, I think it was SNES 9X, you know, or maybe it was Nesticle, this cannot be included in any commercial sale, and you have to click OK to go through. You know, like, this is not information that is not available within the emulator that they're using.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you open the about window or the help window, and it's going to be right there. So offering that up as an apology or as, like, 2 months after is like offering someone a glass of lukewarm piss when they're thirsty. It's stupid. It's ridiculous.
So I was alerted to this by a few different people. It was like three or four people, basically. And they basically ran down, because I don't know a lot about these licenses. I don't know a lot about this GPL stuff, but there are stuff. There are foundations for, I guess, open source software that take this very seriously.
Okay.
There have been lawsuits in the past, I'm guessing,
yes,
to go after companies that have basically stolen open source code and used it.
I don't understand some of the various levels and things like that, but I mean, I understand that this is usually going to work out in the favor of the person who is making the complaint if they make the complaint.
I think part of it, part of this is the fact that, I guess it's called the TiVoization. I've been seeing that term, the TiVoization of software. So basically what that means is you are taking open source software and then restricting how it's used in your own program.
Right.
Which goes against the entire spirit of how it was intended to be used. So I guess this is the foundations of the GPL here. Nobody should be restricted by the software they use. There are four freedoms that every user should have. The freedom to use the software for any purpose. The freedom to change the software to suit your needs. The freedom to share your software with your friends and neighbors. And the freedom to share the changes you make.
Not only are they charging for it, but they're also basically jailhousing all the functions.
They're jailhousing something they don't own.
Right.
When a program offers all of these freedoms, we call it free software. So they're taking free software and then restricting everything for profit, which is totally going against. So I'm not saying I'm not a legal expert at all, but it sounds like since this is over multiple people being violated. We're talking, these are not just a single individual. These could be multiple people that worked in this over the years.
Well, SNES 9X itself was, I mean, kind of like a relay baton. It was handed off from programmer to programmer to programmer.
The late 90s?
From the mid to late 90s all the way to, like, I would say it did end up, I think the project finished. I don't think they're still working on it. But, there's multiple, like, if they wanted to write this just for the SNES 9X part, they would have to find all of the different programmers that had worked on it and work out either an agreement, get a signature that it was okay, pay them a certain amount of money. And, I mean, that's hard enough to do, not to mention all the other emulators that are on the system.
Yeah, so it sounds like they never even went to these guys and asked permission.
No.
Be like, hey, can we do this? If they did that, okay, you might be able to get away with it. They might have said no, though, because you say you're jailhousing the software. And you're restricting how we intended to be open and free.
And, you know, a lot of people who make emulators, they weren't doing it to play free games. Just like, you know, hackers have this, people think hackers are all about stealing data. These are people who just want to know the in and out of every aspect of a machine or a system or a computer. You know, for them, it was a quest of knowledge to get, you know, to see the guts of it and see how it worked. So they are likely to be very upset that you are restricting aspects of it.
So it sounds like this, there's going to be legal ramifications. It sounds like that. There's either going to be lawyers will probably be contacted, at least. So this could be something where an injunction might be, they might go to a judge and say, we want these Retron 5s not sold.
Yeah.
We want them off the shelf before even a lawsuit happens. It's possible. It could happen. So, I mean, at that point, you might get to a point where you won't have a Retron 5 on the shelf. So, and it could also be obviously monetary damages to Hyperkin because they broke the open source agreement for multiple software.
Yeah.
Allegedly, of course, all alleged at this point. But I got an email from someone that spelled it out, and these are guys that I guess they wanted to wait. They probably figured, going back, these guys probably figured there was some shit going on, but they wanted to crack it and see the source code to be sure and get evidence.
Well, even you and I, who aren't programmers, always were like, well, where the fuck is the emulation coming from?
Where is it coming from, and who did they license it from? Because it was never told.
And now we know, and we've even named some of it properly, which is stupid.
Front ends, GPL violations. Jeez. Oh, Hyperkin.
I mean, I don't know. It's hard for me to feel any sort of bad for them with all the delays and...
No, I mean, I feel bad because these are decisions that were made probably from the very top not to do it. I mean, and so you have the guys working on it, the grunts working on it. They don't...
Then again,
it sounds like they're just hacking together. They're not programming themselves. They're just hacking this together from all the existing software. So it actually didn't even sound that difficult.
So why did we get the year delays? You know, I mean, I feel... I don't feel like Hyperkin's a big company. I mean,
this could be,
you see the same guy in every video that's defending delays and stuff like that. You know what I mean? It's like,
well, then this could be something that can put a company under.
Yeah.
It potentially could. If they get a lawsuit for hundreds of thousands of dollars, that could be it.
Done.
We'll see what happens.
And now it's time for a little Q&A, just a little Q&A with you and me. All right. So, Rob at VHS Trash, Pat and Pixicle. Do you think text-based games will ever make a comeback?
In a mainstream way, no. I don't think we'll ever get to the point where we'll have Infocom putting out $40 games on the shelf that you go... You won't go and buy a text game for your Wii U or Xbox One ever again. I don't think that's going to happen.
They will not make a major comeback like that. However, languages like Twine and the interactive fiction community are still alive and well. If you want to play text-based games, you definitely can. And the aforementioned Twine seems like it's been a pretty big hit with people and has made text-based adventures with some pictures, yeah. If you want, very easy to make again. So people sure. have gotten into it.
Yeah, I mean, I could make a choose-your-own-adventure thing, you know, in high school. I knew how to program that, at least. They're simple to program. So for that, I guess it'll never die out. But, I mean, for terms of commercially, they're, yeah, probably not going to be seen again. Next question is a WWE one, which we kind of answered already, about the loss of Roman Reigns. Who do you think WWE should book in his place?
That was by Zach Ninel W.
At this point, there's really no one to book. And you have to build up Ambrose or Daniel Bryan when he comes back. That's it.
I feel like Ambrose is the only one that's active right now, and it's going to take months to build him up to that caliber. Luke Aaron at Hexagon. What are some of the worst shipping stories that you've both had?
Oh, man.
For me, it was when I moved out here. I had my turntables shipped out here. They were Technique 1200s. They still are because they're tanks. And they were wonderfully packed by my mother with foam and bubble wrap, and they were just perfectly packaged. Mm-hmm. I could tell by the way they showed up, except for the fact that it looked like a metal pipe or something had come crashing down on one side of the box.
Oh, wow.
And they just left it. There was actual rips in the cardboard. I could see the bubble wrap and the foam peanuts coming out, and they actually left the package like this.
So someone dropped something on it?
It looked like someone dropped something on it.
And then it was just sitting there on it?
And when I opened it up, the top, the shell over the top was completely shattered. Of course, the first thing I did was fucking panic, you know, plug it in, check the pitch and the quartz lock and everything, check a couple records, and, you know, the turntable worked fine, you know, a claim was made, but, you know, just thinking about that, if that had happened today, they don't make Techniques anymore, if that sort of, problem happened, yeah. They supposedly they're going to again, but replacing just that plastic shell, the dust shell, is like $100.
Sure.
You know, luckily it happened at a point in time where it was replaceable for 15.
Worst shipping story. There's been a lot.
Yeah, you've had way more than me.
This year I've had three in a row of not getting stuff, which never happened. I almost never had lost mail until this year. But I've had systems, mostly systems. I know it's hard to find boxes for stuff sometimes. That doesn't mean you ship my Odyssey 2 to me. Just taping the outside of the box with that with that awful brown packing tape too. Brown packing tape, which I think was outlawed because it's the worst thing ever. It's right there.
Yeah,
it's like that 25 before they had the clear packing tape. They had the brown packing tape.
Yeah,
and then I basically didn't get, talk to them, basically what the hell? Oh, it's just a system. I said, dude, part of the value is the box. You destroyed the box. That also happened with a. One of the things I don't have that you'd be surprised, because I love this sort of stuff, is I don't have a Magnavox Odyssey rifle, because I did get one time, and the box was destroyed, because they taped the whole, it was absolutely obliterated. So I shipped it back to them.
Remember that.
That pissed me off. That happened also with one or two other boxes that happened to, where they taped on the outside. In terms of carts, they were usually well packed. I have had carts packed in just a freaking envelope before. I think I had a Game Boy game sent in a white envelope. Like, people steal games sometimes. That'd be the easiest thing. I had a comic book sent, an expensive comic book sent. It didn't have a backing board.
Oh my god.
It was sent in at least they did this. They put it in one of those priority flat rate ones. They put it in that, then put it in something else, but there was no bubble wrap. This is a comic book worth hundreds of dollars.
Right.
And I got a good deal on it. So I don't think it was damaged, but it's like, come on, really?
Yeah, Vonnie always gets really, really nervous when it comes to ordering comics online. She won't do it. And I had to order a comic for her. It wasn't worth
it. It should be bubble wrap.
It wasn't worth a ton, but it was just to finish off a series that she had in singles. So I ordered it for her, and it came immaculately packed. You know, like they had bagged, boarded it, then they had done up this weird cardboard thing around it to make sure it stayed stiff. Bubbles and then they put it in a bubble envelope and they shipped it. And I was like, this is cool. But, like, I mean, I am sure that anyone who's super into comics has horror stories about ordering them via mail.
And then recently, I ordered a Neo Geo Pro controller, which was a CD controller. And then it showed up unclaimed on the tracking number. The next day, it showed up unclaimed. So they tried delivering it. The next day, it was unclaimed, which never happens. Even if you get delivery confirmation, they usually try to leave a note, or they try to come back again, schedule it. So I go to the post office, and this is just the local post office, terrible customer service for the most part at my local post office.
I like our local post office. It's just slow.
I've had really bad experiences. So I go to the guy. I'm like, all right. Here's the number, tracking number. It says unclaimed. So he's like, oh, yeah, he says, very unusual. The carrier did that. The carrier marked it unclaimed. They're not supposed to do that. So I'm thinking, great. My carrier's a Neo Geo collector that stole my freaking joystick. So I say to him, okay, so you can probably track it, right? You know who did that. Get in touch with the carrier and find out. They never did that. I didn't hear back from them. They had my phone number. I come back a week later. The same freaking guy working there. I tell him the story. I said, hey, you helped me out last week. Here's the tracking number. What happened? And then he looked at me like I was absolutely out of my fucking mind. Like, he looked at me like I was bothering him over my missing mail. So I never heard back from it. The good news is that, though, the fine people at Analog saw my distress on Twitter and sent me one of their nice wood Neo Geo controllers. So thank you, Analog, for sending me that.
Yep. Brandon Pascoa at B Pascoa. Are aftermarket gamepads even worth it anymore? I think it really depends on what you're referring to. There are some... I mean, fight sticks are technically aftermarket. Fight pads are technically aftermarket. And I think a lot of those are very good. Especially the... You know, as much as Mad Catz gets shit on, their TE sticks are quite nice. I also think as far as... retro systems go. And as time goes on, I mean, the need for aftermarket pads increases. There's a lot of crap ones. I mean, there really is. There's a lot of garbage ones. But, for instance, I'm going to try not to advertise the brand. You can ask me online if you want. But there is actually an aftermarket N64 controller that I truly like more than the original Nintendo 64.
Why can't you say what it is?
Well, it's the Yobo controller.
Yeah. The ones that come in the shells, the clamshell
thing? It's one of the ones that we sell at work. We sell a couple different aftermarket ones at work. It doesn't look anything like a Nintendo 64 controller, but it's fairly comfortable to hold. But it uses like a PlayStation analog stick.
Oh, okay.
So it doesn't blow out as fast as like the other ones do. In comparison to something like the, so people don't think I'm just fucking blowing shit we sell at the store, we sell a Hyperkin distributed Circa controller that looks just like the Nintendo 64 controller, but it feels like shit. Like, I hate how it feels. So, you know, people always tell me they have problems with these Yobo controllers or they've read bad things, and I always explain to them, only people who have had bad experiences generally review stuff online. And most people who have bought these Yobo controllers enjoy them. I used them last weekend to play a bunch of WWF No Mercy with my buddies on an N64, and they work great. So, I mean, sometimes in certain instances, like where the Nintendo 64 controller wasn't built well to begin with, you're going to have to get used to some sort of aftermarket controller.
This is from at Metallistad. It's like Amistad, but it's metal.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, what is your opinions on the whole instrument game genre? Influence / despise / loved? I'm guessing you're talking about Guitar Hero and Rock Band for the most part, since that's the most well-known one by far, and that was a huge gaming fad for like 3 years. You know, from like, what, 2006, 2009?
It's still popular. As a matter of fact, it's gaining in popularity again.
It's coming back again?
Yeah, I get calls... You know, whereas I had radio silence from people calling me for instruments and games for like a year and a half. Now, every day at least, I get people calling for Guitar Hero controllers. They're picking it back up.
The controllers?
Yeah, we give them away for free because I can't warranty them. So I just shuffle them out the door as fast as I can. If someone comes in, I don't pay them for them, and then I give them away for free. I never played Guitar Hero. Well, I played Rock Band once and didn't enjoy it. Never played Guitar Hero. DJ Hero I thought was amusing when I brought it home one night, and I was like, I'm gonna try this out, right? And I'm like, Do fader. This is interesting. And then I looked over at all my real electronic music equipment. Yeah, and I was like,
what the fuck?
I'm like, I'm just taking this back. I don't think they're bad games, and I don't think you're bad if you enjoy them. I never got into them. I'm much more interested in the ones that don't really pretend to be instruments, like Beatmania or Poppin' Music, or the ones that are popular in Japan. Like, I like those more.
I just think, I don't know, I didn't like it when they got popular because I used to go to the Digital Press store in New Jersey. It would have these once a month sort of gaming meetups, and then it was dominated by people playing Rock Band, singing karaoke basically, and playing fake music. And that for a while to me was the most popular sort of gaming stuff. And to me, I don't know. You say, well, it's a game. Yeah, sure, it's a game. It's just that to me, it's like playing a game of freaking Simon, you know, or Follow. I don't know. I just never got into it. I
like Simon.
But that's fine. That shouldn't be your dominant game genre. It's basically karaoke.
I don't know.
A karaoke game.
I mean, here's my thing. So I don't like a lot of the music they would put on something like Rock Band, right? But I do like Beatmania. And Beatmania is all about hitting buttons to a rhythm. I like rhythm, okay? And Guitar Hero, say, at really high levels, not quite as crazy as Beatmania, it does throw insane patterns at you. So there is skill involved. I just never got into the American versions of it because I didn't like the radio rock-oriented track listings.
You know why I don't like it? The more I think about it? Because those games are the beginning and the end of a genre. That's it. That's it. That's what it is. That's as far as you came from. That's as far as you're going. That I just since it's not, that's why I don't like it.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
No.
It's like a freaking Tiger LCD game for your system. It's as simple and as complex as that.
Yeah, but I mean, I hate Konami for a lot of reasons, but I mean, they've been evolving their music games for a while. Well, no, they've stagnated now. I mean, Beatmania 2DX was basically the end of Konami doing music games, but I don't know. I mean, I think that there are times where they are fun, but the whole rock versions of them, even the American like DJ versions of them, where they tried to make it more like playing the instrument, I couldn't do it.
I guess I don't like these things where you're simulating something for real that much where you...
You were the one who wanted Silent Service on the video game, Mears. That's simulating something for real.
Do I have a fucking periscope and buttons on a thing?
Fucking idiot. I don't like these things where you're simulating something. We covered so many simulations that we didn't need to.
You are simulating an instrument that you are playing, but you're not playing it.
And you're simulating being a wiener. All right, so, Roach Queen, this is for Pat. You, AVGN, and the Cinema Snob all have asshole Robs. How did poor innocent Rob get such a bad reputation?
I think robots have a reputation for turning evil at some point.
I would agree, actually.
But our Robs are actually different. I believe the Cinema Snob one is more like, I think he's like a over-the-top bad humor 80s-ish Rob. The one in James is, what was it, the 100th video was totally just like a mastermind world domination. And my Rob's more of just a dick. My Rob's more, or at least he was, that Rob, was more just a snarky asshole I turned him into, which I think out of all three, I'm going to start a war with the Cinema Snob. I think my Rob was the most complex. I'll say that.
Okay. That's nice. Mid-boss. At F1 mid-boss. I'd like to hear about the scumfuck who called the store. That's a term that I use a lot online. So, basically... God, I drink to forget. There's a regular customer who is very nice. He wanted a Retron 5. He had some trade-ins to make. There was a traffic accident. He couldn't make it. Basically, they got there late. Triggered, closed the store. I get a call at like 7:59. Hey, are you fucking listening? I'm talking about you. I get a call, and this guy starts chewing me out about how he listens to the podcast, and he's been a regular shopper at the store. No, he hasn't. For years, And, you know, they should be open, even though it's 1 minute to closing. And he's going to make sure that he leaves a note on the CU podcast page about, you know, how Luna Video Games isn't what it portrays itself to be. And I'm like, well, sir, I'm very sorry. There's nothing I can really do about that. Unfortunately, you are threatening me, but I am here and open now minutes after I should be closed, and I do apologize that the other store appears to have closed in maybe a minute early, but there's nothing I can do. So then he asked me if I could stay open for an extra half an hour so he could come down and get the Retron 5, and I said no. I said no. I said I have a personal life, and I have wedding things that I need to plan with my fiance this evening. So he started making fun of me for having a personal life, and for having a fiance that I needed to go see to make wedding plans with. So, and he just talked a bunch of shit and basically said he was going to post on all of your videos, and he was going to post all over the Facebook page about how no one should ever shop here because we're awful. And then the good guy comes in the next day and is like, yeah, that's... that wasn't me. That was my brother. He got my phone. He's a meth head. And he showed us the scar. You stabbed your brother, you piece of shit. Stabbed him in the arm. Scar about this wide. About that long.
So, I'm back on the screen now. So, basically, what we had was a guy who had an issue with you or something. We don't know why. And has some issues.
Yeah, he didn't care. According to his brother, he didn't care for my opinions on the podcast.
Well, I don't care for your opinions either, and I have you here. I don't tell you to stay late for me.
Eat my crusty asshole. so
I think your opinions suck too. Doesn't mean I'm going to threaten you.
This guy, yeah. So he just gave me the what for, and basically he made himself out to be a very angry customer when in fact he wasn't the customer at all. When his brother had gone to get gas for the car, he had grabbed his brother's phone and made a call and chewed me out.
And this is what got me. The whole threat of I'm going to post on videos, and it's like...
Great, we'll block you.
Yeah.
Or great, I'll tell my whole story.
But the whole thing is that... And this is not for... Usually the fans in person aren't like this.
No.
But people think because they are, quote, a fan of you, that it can entitle them to treat you like shit. And to expect no repercussions for doing that.
I want
to
word this differently. Because that's not my interaction with fans at all. My interaction with people who are fans of the podcast have always been really great. They really have.
Yes,
and I talked about that last week. But this guy decided that he could use that as a weapon.
Yes.
Oh, well, because I listen to the podcast, you have to bend my every whim.
Oh, no, yeah.
Or else I'm going to smear you. Where are you going to smear me? You're going to make a... he threatened to make a YouTube video. Great.
Oh,
15 people will see it. Yeah.
No, I think it's... But what I was saying, though, is that they think they can use that as a shield. Because that happens to me probably more than you. They're like, you know, they'll leave a shitty comment and I'll respond to it. Or whatever, and they'll be like, oh, I'm a fan of yours. I don't give a shit. If you treat me like shit, I don't care. I don't care if you bought every one of my DVDs or you watch every one of my videos. If you do something bad to me or my friends, I don't fucking care. Yeah. It doesn't entitle you to shit.
Yeah.
It doesn't. It doesn't entitle you to have an audience with me personally. It doesn't entitle you... it doesn't tell you to treat people awful. It just doesn't.
No, I mean, and that was the thing. He was totally using it as a weapon because every time I came at him with logic like, well, I'm sorry, but I'm open now, and now I have to close. I'm the one on the podcast, not so-and-so. This has nothing to do with the podcast. This has really nothing to do with the business, actually, because the story we got later was that the reason why they were closed is because his brother had to take a piss and couldn't wait. So he took the crackhead guy had to take a piss and came out, and at like 8:59 I was like, because I was running late with my paperwork, Traeg had closed down and I was still there, and just, you know, because of habit, without looking at the clock, answered the phone and just dealt with this.
So you shouldn't have even answered it.
Right. I dealt with this word vomit.
Why would you answer the phone at 2 minutes before you close?
Well, because like I said, I was trying to do paperwork and, you know, it's just like whatever, boom, and then I get this fucking ear full of garbage.
So be nice to us. Be nice to everyone. No reason to be an asshole.
No.
Being an asshole rarely gets you anything.
It's like the people who are assholes to us in the comment section. It's like, you don't know us, and why do we care?
Well, that's totally different, though, because to me, that's just them. They can be blowing off steam, or they can just... That's their one chance to be cool with themselves or to have some sort of little bit of power in their lives. For the most part, I don't care.
They're bored of sucking their own dicks.
That could be it, too. But, but when you threaten people, come on, man.
Yeah.
No threats. That's just lame. First of all, you're never going to do it. But that's just lame. Don't you have anything better to do?
I got threatened with violence twice this week in the comments section.
Did you really?
That was fun. Yeah.
I think I banned the one person.
Yeah.
You should allow everyone their freedom of speech no matter what. No, I don't really on a YouTube video.
You threatened to slap me or punch me in the mouth.
No.
Goodbye.
Yeah, and they figured that if they slapped you, I would stand around and do nothing. Like that'd be funny.
Actually, the funny thing was the guy who called was rambling incoherently to his brother about how it didn't matter what I said, because if he posted about Luna in the comment section, you were going to take his side, not mine.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Luna's terrible. They've never given me a good deal at all.
No, we've never done
that. I'm going to slap the taste out of Ian's mouth.
Anyways, all right, we went long on that one. Mason Bauer, at Mr. Shivens, Pat, how much have you spent getting your NES collection? Jesus. What games eluded you? The Usual Suspects don't count, NWC, etc.
What games eluded me? The games that eluded me were the ones I got at the end. Like, you're talking about your Bonk's Adventure games, you're talking maybe your Danny Sullivan's Indie Heat. You're talking games like that. You know, those very hard to find games. You know, because Danny, everyone's running to get these copies of Danny. Everyone wants to pop in and play that.
I don't know if they were serious. I'm hoping they were joking, but someone said somewhere, I think it was in the comments, that every time we talk about Danny Sullivan's Indie Heat, the price goes up on eBay.
I think that's only proper. You know, the last 50 games are the hardest to get on the system that you just can't find in the wild, especially those like the unlicensed ones. You're not going to find a some I got early, a game like Wallet Bear and the No game I got earlier on because I knew them from NES Archive or the Wisdom Tree games, for example.
Right.
So not that they eluded me, it's just that I got them earlier because I went after them. In terms of how much I spent, Jesus, a lot less than $15,000, that's for sure. it wasn't even $15,000 with the NWZ gray card. It wasn't even $15,000 out with the gold, yeah. I don't know. See, that's the thing, though, because when you buy in lots, especially at the flea markets, back in 2004, 2005, I went to Englishtown. I still remember this. I bought like 40 games for like $20.
Yeah,
40 NES games for $20.
And these
weren't
all
like bases loaded. Yeah. I remember getting Ghostbusters in there, or Ghostbusters 2.
I would get lots with no doubles in almost games for that much at a flea market.
Yeah, so at that point, you start getting doubles, and yes, you do have to put them on the market or trade them. So that makes it
hard, though, is because you can't really factor in how much... I mean, do you really remember how much you made back off of selling doubles and then put back in? What do you really think you spend?
I think on average $5 a game.
There you go.
I'd say under $4,000.
I would say,
and I think that's when people say I think that because some games would average out to $2 or $1, and then talk about the games that you then sold and gain your money back from lots. I think it's under $4,000.
So to go back to what we talked about earlier, that's. Because I was kind of thinking that's why I wanted to know what you were
saying. And that ended by 2010. Right. I finished my collection in early 2010.
And I think it ended before then. I think you got a little lucky.
Not counting stadium events.
But
that's a caveat.
Yeah, I think so we were talking about, you know, the $15,000 sale. And I asked how much do you think it would cost an eBay person to do it now? And we said $8,000. I think if you look back at 98, 99, 2000, when Nintendo collecting started to become a thing, I think a lot of people were averaging $3 to $5 a game for the first 500, 550, and then maybe $8 to $10 a game for the rest of the game.
So Bonk's Adventure was like a $10-$15 game.
Yeah, exactly.
In the late '90s. Mm-hmm. Stadium Events was $100 or $200.
Yep. That was
and that was the most expensive.
That was the one that you had to worry about. I mean,
I
don't want to make people salivate because I passed on it, but I mean, Pan Asian games you could have for $100.
I remember. Way back, yes. I remember they weren't that much.
I passed on the Bubble Bath Babes because I thought 150 was too much for it.
Do I need a label upgrade for my Guardian Legend? Is that faded?
I don't think it is.
Okay, if it's an aside.
I, I I think it's just fine. I think your Guardian Legend's good.
That's where I'm at. Label upgrades. Every NES marathon, I write down the 4 or 5 and need, like, oh, my Destination Earth Star.
Yeah, and you always manage to find more because you never want to stop buying.
I do want to. You think I like? You like? Think I like being this insane?
I do, and we'll get to that shortly. Okay, Mike Tartaglia. Did I go to high school with you? Thoughts on bending iPhone 6 Plus or thoughts on Apple's new line of electronics in general?
I thought the iPhone 6 also had the bending. I might get an iPhone 6. It's about time for an upgrade. So basically what's happening, I guess people are putting these in their pockets or sitting down, and it's actually bending the phone because they're very thin.
And they're big.
And they're all the iPhone. The 6 Plus. The 6 Plus is like an iPad mini.
That's what he asked about.
The 6 Plus is like an iPad mini. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I laughed at Rue when he got his freaking Galaxy a couple years ago. Those are the first big ones. They're absolutely ridiculous. You can't hold them with one hand and, like, do anything, basically. It's how big they are. Thoughts on it? I don't know. I guess don't ever be an early adopter, like I said, because you have a phone that bends now. I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, the coolness of being the first person on your block with X, Y, or Z product, you should have outgrown that at about 12. And when you wait a week and you see that maybe the iPhone 6 Plus is not the best built piece of equipment, then you change your opinion on what you buy.
I still wonder why people literally camp out to get these products. Me too.
Who are they impressing?
All I know is this is the type of people I will never be friends with or associate with, because that's how vacuous your life is.
Well, and I don't want to assume that everyone is that way, because
I will assume most of them are.
I will. I mean, here's the thing. I'm going to get the shit for this, and you won't.
I'm a hipster.
And you won't, because you're Pat and I'm Ian.
what? I get carte blanche sometimes?
You get carte blanche all the time.
No, I don't. People hate me, too.
No, they don't. I love gadgetry, but I like musical gadgetry. I like video game gadgetry. Yeah. Phone gadgetry and that sort of stuff doesn't appeal to me. But I would still not camp out for a new synthesizer or, you know, a new video game console. I would consider it, or I'd maybe want to get it within a couple days of launch. But I don't know. I think there's always a good reason to wait and see what people have to say about the immediate release. Like when Teenage Engineering released the OP1 synthesizer, I waited and read reviews, I mean, for like 2 fucking years on that thing before I, you know, bit down and bought it, because I wanted to make sure that it was durable.
Especially with the Apple phones, by now, what the hell are you getting out of the 6 you'd get out of the 5 or the 4S? I don't have to upgrade my phone. I just want to because I hear the battery life on the 6 is a hell of a lot better than this. The battery life on the Apple phones are terrible. So if it has a better battery life, that's worth the upgrade, especially if it's only a couple $100, and I can sell this and break even, basically. Or close to it.
So I have a 4 that's wonky, but I mean, for me, my phone is my least important piece of technology. I'd rather my phone break than my DS break.
This is from at Foxhounder, Oliver, who posts on thepunkeffect.com. How long can you imagine yourself doing Pat the NES Punk videos? Are you ever worried that you'll stop making revenue? Well, it's not about... I mean, honestly, if you look at the NES Punk videos, that's not what I'm making the most revenue on. If you look at the time versus the money that's made, it's a podcast for the most part. Not that I don't make money off them, because I do have videos that are very popular overall, but I'm saying for time versus what gets out of them, it's a podcast. I'll do the videos as long as I have a good idea, basically. Now, will I get to the point where I start doing regular reviews? I might. Like, so if I get an early review copy of, say, the Wii U Smash Brothers, maybe I'll review that, but not, won't be a quote-unquote NES Punk video. But I just did Toki. I thought I had a good idea. It was socially relevant. The next video coming up, I have a good idea for it, and that's how my ideas usually come. They come in spurts. The next 2 videos, I have ideas for it. After that, I don't know. I have stuff that I haven't done now, so I said I was going to review before. Like my super secret controller on the NES that's very rare that I still want to do a video of, but I have to get around to doing it. So I don't know. Will I be 60 and still doing the videos? Probably not. Then again, never say never. The Three Stooges had the same act for 40 years, 50 years, just about. And they kept going until they basically died. Will that be me? I don't know. But there's other stuff I want to do.
Here's another Zach. This is Zach Attack 1984. How much of a role do you think legit OCD plays in video game collecting? And why is this rarely discussed among collectors?
Depends the type of collector.
And let's get rid of video game and just say all collecting.
Yes. For the most part.
I don't have a lot to say because I'm not a collector. I don't consider myself one. But I'm gonna why aren't they talking about it? Because there's a stigma to it. And if obsessive compulsive disorder is the real reason why some of these collectors are so crazy about what they're doing, the last thing they want to do is announce that or associate themselves with that.
Yeah.
There is always been a stigma with mental illness, and there will continue to be.
Sure. Unfortunately, though, it does affect the markets in these hobbies a lot, and a lot of times it affects it maliciously. When you have a collector that has to go out and get 20 copies of a rare game, that affects the market, unfortunately, in a negative way. There's games I couldn't get for years. Like, for example, a black box volleyball game. I couldn't get one for years. I kept getting outbid. Then you find out later, this guy's going out and getting 20 of them. You
sure.
Know, it's like, what the hell is going on? I just want the one.
But I don't think that's legit OCD. I think that's someone trying to corner the market on something.
It could be OCD as well, though.
It could be. I mean, it's tough to say. I mean, I think that, and like I said, I hope the stigma goes away, but like I said, I think it's the refusal to talk about, but I think it's more the people who go out to the flea market, and even though they already have four bases loaded, they buy another one because they saw it for 50 cents and they just had to have it.
That might be OCD. That might just be wanting a good deal, you know, because I'm a bargain.
But they already have it.
But it's 50
cents. But they already have it. Why do you need a good deal on something you already have?
It's a 50 cent base loaded.
On something you already have. So, I don't know. I think
the OCD comes more into the motive versus anything else. Not exactly the action, it's the motive behind it. So for example, like for getting a complete set of something, if that's your goal from the start to get it because this is NES my favorite system, I want to get every game. Is that OCD? Not necessarily.
It's a goal. It's not necessarily OCD. I think OCD would be more like, I only want to get the 250 games that I have on this list, and now they're looking at 250, and they decide that they need to keep filling in those gaps.
That's what I mean, because I knew people that started getting collections of things like Game & Watch or Vectrex, and they started, I'll just get a few. Now I want more. Now I want more. Now I want more. Now I want to go for the whole set, just because it's there.
Right.
Not necessarily because they want to do it. It's all point of, like, again, the motive. Why do you want it?
Yeah,
do you want it just because it has to be complete? Or do you actually want it to get it? I know it's hard to always differentiate, and sometimes the lines are blurred.
Because, they could just keep going because they realize they really enjoy it. But, you never know unless it's the person. Like I said, yeah. The person is unlikely to say what that real reason is.
Sure. It comes down to the end of the day, the person within themselves asking themselves, why am I doing this? And is it healthy? Now, in terms of, we talk about mental illness, as long as you're not hurting someone else, I don't care what you do for the most part. That goes with most things. But if you're hurting yourself, and you have a problem. Say you start going into debt because you have to have every single Super Nintendo game. You start going into debt. You got to spend $2,000 on the freaking Speed Racer EX Entertainment cartridge or whatever. You just have to. There's no reason to have that game. Unless you have to have a complete set.
Right.
You know, did I say it right? EX Entertainment? Whatever.
I don't know.
I'm tired.
Well, then let's get through these last two. Vexed Sprites at Vexed Sprites. Pat and Ian, do you think that political social agendas have a place in games as in other mediums, or should they stay for fun? I think with anything, whether it's any form of entertainment, TV, books, movies, of course there's going to be political social agendas. I like games that can cover both. My only problem is that a lot of games that cover social or political...
Well, agenda's a loaded word.
Well, yes, but that's why I'm avoiding it. I think that games that cover political or social topics or issues in video games tend to be a bit ham-fisted on both sides of the the border. So I tend to enjoy them less. I like a more nuanced discussion. A good example would be something like Bioshock Infinite, which I didn't really play, but I read plenty about. Probably something that I would enjoy in story form, written very well, but in game form, it's hammy. It's not
too much about the outsiders and xenophobia.
There's not a lot. There's not. It's right. I am on the side of the story. I am not interested in the way the story is being told.
Well, and that goes back to, again, agenda. Are you going to convince the other side? Because you threw all this shit into a game and threw it at someone? Probably not. I don't think people are that easily... Well, maybe people, some people are easily swayed by that sort of thing. I think what it comes down to in video games or any sort of art, because you have social issues in movies, in music, going back, it has to fit. It can't just be, like, shoehorned in. And it has to make sense for it to be there. Otherwise, the effectiveness, and like I said, if it comes across, quote-unquote, as an agenda, I'm not interested in it. I'm not interested in trying to be sold something. If it's fit, if it fits in there naturally, that's fine. But if that's your main objective, I don't want it in there. I personally don't. It doesn't mean it can't be in there. It could be in there. It could be in a movie. But I'm just not the audience for that, you know.
And the last one, Robert. Hello, Rob. You're a Mario Kart friend. At Brainiac something. I can't really pronounce it. There's lots of I's. Brainiac. Does Frank like recording for your Ask Frank series? Go.
Frank does like recording for the Ask Frank series. He's only done it twice. So we just did it about a month ago. And we did like over 300 questions. Couple hours, but he enjoyed it. That's the weird thing about him. He doesn't like the narrative stuff. He doesn't like acting, even though he's excellent at it, which is really frustrating to try to get to do something, and he gives me shit for it. But it's like, Frank, you have a natural comedic timing and tone is perfect. But he likes the questions being asked, like, I think, because it's another world. It's the same reason why you like watching him answer the questions in theory, because it's like a disconnected world. He's totally not on the internet. And you totally are, so you like seeing that disconnect for someone. Like, I always say he's like Rip Van Winkle to these people.
That's basically what it comes down to. For him, I mean, I could see him liking it, much like I don't like acting, but I can sit here and talk with you, you know, for 2 hours.
You spiel your liberal agenda.
Yeah, I sure do. just like a fucking, I was going to say something so gross. So gross.
Oh, man.
No, but I mean, for Frank, much like for me, it's a reason to sit down and have a beer and just shoot the shit.
Yeah, well it's me just asking weird questions at him. I like seeing his response to it. The thing about Frank when he answers them is that some he takes in stride, some he enjoys that they're so wacky, but he's always very quick with the response. There's ones where he's just like...
Well, it wouldn't be Frank if he wasn't.
I guess so. Let's be frank about Frank. So... We gotta get him on the podcast. Should we get guests in the podcast in the future? You still don't want any guests? Like, we can figure out how to do a call in.
I mean,
you always said, "Well, let's see what the podcast develops." We're doing it for over a year now. I mean, we'll be dead.
Norm wants to be on the podcast.
No, I don't want to be on the podcast. Should we get Norm on the podcast? We're gonna talk about the history of fucking Sega's, you know, robot toy from '67.
Norm and I could just make out for 10 minutes as a topic.
Did you hang out with him a lot at MAGFest?
No, he wasn't there.
Oh.
Yeah.
Then why are you so eager to have him on the podcast? Why are you cracking your knuckles?
Because he always asks.
Are you doppelgangers?
We are doppelgangers, yeah.
Except he's big and brawny. You gotta hit the gym.
He's sexy me.
He's sexy you?
He's sexy me, and I'm ugly me. I am hirsute me.
Oh, come on.
I'm hairy me.
You're getting married. You snagged a girl somehow.
All right, I have to finish cracking my knuckles, so let's wrap this one up. We got another one in the bags.
Yeah, I'm exhausted.
Me too.
So this has been a fine, above average, completely unnecessary podcast. Follow along on Stitcher, especially iTunes, where we crack the top 10. Speaking of cracked knuckles, we crack the top 10 every time it comes out, but then we dissipate within a few days, much like my memories of Ian. Hopefully, because we don't do one weekly, but we'll get to number one eventually, and then also on the punkfed.com, but especially iTunes, please listen. And then we have a Patreon. If you'd like to support us, it's patreon.com/pixelsickle. That Ian has to update with some writing every now and then.
I just did it last week.
Okay,
I update once a week.
Okay,
I have to update this week.
And on the Patreon, you can get exclusive clips, not video clips, not on YouTube, or you can see the entire podcast and video form after the fact. So, for Ian Ferguson.
Yep, that's me.
I am Pat Contry. We'll see you in a fortnight.
14 days.
Thanks for the definition.
Old timey.
Have a good day.
Bananas.